Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 4, Sati Quits Her Body, Text 18. Atastavotpannamidam kalevaram Nadharayasye Shitti Kantagahina Gyadhasya Mohadhi Vishuddhim Andaso Jagupsitas Yod Dharanam Pratakshate Atastavot Panamidam Kalevaram Nadarayishye Shitti Kantagahina Jagdashya Mohadhi Vishuddhim Andaso Jagupsitas Yod Dharanam Pratakshate Atastavotpannam idam kalevaram Nadarayishye shitti kantagahina Jagdashya mohadhi vishuddhim andaso Jagupsitas yod dharanam prachakshate Translation. Therefore, I shall no longer bear this unworthy body, which has been received from you who have blasphemed Lord Shiva. If someone has taken food which is poisonous, the best treatment is to vomit. Purport. Since Sati was the representation of the external potency of the Lord, it was in her power to vanquish many universes, including many dakshas, but in order to save her husband from the charge that he employed his wife, Sati, to kill Daksha because he could not do so due to his inferior position, she decided to give up her body. Om Agyane Chimadandasya Ganandana Shalakaya Chakshun Militan Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. We have reached a momentous stage in this drawn out tension, Cold War, involving Sati, her father Daksha, and her husband, Lord Shiva. And surrounding them are hosts of sadhus and sages and demigods. Now we've reached the conclusion of what started from what seems to be maybe just a slight, some disrespect. Now we have Sati concluding, I'm giving up my body. Just like if you take food which poisons you, the best treatment is to vomit. Similarly, I've gotten a poisonous body due to my father's offense against Lord Shiva. Therefore, the best treatment is that I give up my body. Now, you may be wondering sometimes, is this some kind of fanaticism? All right, Lord Shiva's been disrespected. Oblations were not offered to Lord Shiva in the sacrificial fire by Daksha. Sati was ignored by her father on account of her relationship with her husband. These things are a part of life. Why would anyone want to give up their body just because of those things? This is the conditioned understanding, because conditioned life means living with the body and making your happiness dependent on your body. Therefore, why would someone want to give up their body? This was the answer given by Didichi when the demigods approached him for his body. That's in the sixth canto, because they were instructed that in order to defeat the demons, they had to make a body, they had to make a weapon out of the body of Didichi. So the demigods approached Didichi and said, "Excuse us for asking. Would you kindly donate your body so we can make a weapon?" And Didichi was completely transcendental. Yet, just to preach, Didichi began to speak, "How can you ask for someone's body? What could be more dear and near than one's own body? Are you trying to destroy my happiness and my chances for progress, asking for my body? Who will give up their body for anything?" Then he reversed and explained the reality that who in their right mind would not give up their body for the sake of others? Who in their right mind would not sacrifice their body for the well-being of all living entities? In other words, I'm going to take this opportunity because this is real service. This is the real purpose of the body, to render transcendent loving service to the Lord however Krishna wants it. We should meditate on how much of our happiness is dependent on our physical condition. It's actually quite embarrassing when you take stock of yourself, when you take stock of how you live your life, and then we see so much of my feeling good, so much of my optimism, so much of my identity and my conception of myself and my future is all dependent on my body. It's very embarrassing. You easily can see this when you get sick. Even just a bit of indigestion in your stomach, you can't digest, and all happiness goes. Because so much of happiness consists in eating. So if simply something is wrong with your stomach, you become so cranky, the whole world loses its meaning. Just because of a digestion problem. And what to speak of if other parts of your body start malfunctioning. Your whole outlook becomes depressed. You don't know what to do with yourself. This is the extent of bodily identification. We should take stock of ourselves and, yes, be embarrassed. How much of my happiness is tied up just with the condition of my body? Actually, it is the greatest miracle that we think we're the body. That's why Srila Prabhupada would speak about it so many times. Of course, we're thinking, oh, we've heard that again and again. In the early days of the movement, it was necessary for Prabhupada to bring up that point. We're not the body. But now, we're far beyond that. 30 years later, we've advanced so much. The movement has moved on. There's the New Age doctrine everywhere. Everyone knows they're spiritual. These days, everyone uses the word spiritual. When athletes, you know, score the winning touchdown, they say, "Oh, it's a spiritual experience." Everyone calls their girlfriend or boyfriend spiritual. You can't have a relationship these days, a Monday relationship, without it being spiritual. So, this is our conception that 30 years ago, Prabhupada had to break down the barriers of Western thinking and introduce reincarnation and the fact that we're not the body. But now, 30 years later, we're all so advanced. We're all simply ready to hear Madhurya Leela, Kicha Govinda, Ujjwala Nilomani. That's where we're at. But if we take stock of ourselves in a humble way, we'll see. Still, this body identification is immense. And therefore, we can understand why Srila Prabhupada, again and again, would preach, we are not the body, we're spirit soul. Spirit soul's duty is to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. In other words, if we simply have this sense of complacency and false assurance that, well, I know I'm not the body theoretically, so that's it. That's my goals are achieved. No, that won't work. True understanding that we're not the body automatically translates into full engagement in devotional service as a spirit soul. That's what Srila Prabhupada gave us. A chance how to live in perfection. A chance to participate in the perfect activities of the spirit soul. The most confidential knowledge of the Vedas. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. The king of all knowledge, the most secret of all secrets. How the spirit soul acts in perfection. This is our legacy. This is our inheritance. But we have to be mindful of the energies that are always operating to cause us to lose sight of our inheritance or even throw it away. There is such a thing as Maya. And the job of illusory energy is to accomplish a miracle. Pure spirit soul identifies with the body. The Vedas say, asango kayam purusha. There's actually never a connection between the spirit soul and the body. Never happens. Simply there's an imaginary connection which is facilitated by the false ego. The false ego makes it seem that matter and spirit have joined in terms of a conditioned soul. But actually, it never happens. So the whole bodily connection is simply imaginary. It's a dream. But that dream is so powerful that we base our hopes for happiness on it. And it's so hard tearing ourselves away from this bodily conception unless we have a wonderful schedule of devotional service. That is the mercy on us. The more devotional service we have, the more we sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure, the more we're free from the bodily platform. I remember reading something Srila Prabhupada said, 77, his last months in Mumbai, and he had just given his umpteenth example of how we're not the body. His umpteenth way of explaining, you know, allegory, how we're not the body. And then Prabhupada said, do you know why I can say such things? And probably the devotees were thinking, oh, well, you're Mahabhagwat, you're Srila Prabhupada. Of course you say such things, you know. But Prabhupada explained, I say such things. In other words, I'm giving this umpteenth example about how we're not the body because I'm always thinking about it. I was shocked. Prabhupada always thinking of examples about how we're not the body? But Prabhupada is showing you, this is real devotion. This is real service to the Lord. He was totally fixed on his dedication to the order of his guru. Therefore, you have, as a dear devotee of Krishna, day and night thinking, how can I explain that we're not the body? How can I come up with another example that we're not the body? So that these devotees will engage in the devotional service of the Lord. That's the whole point of understanding you're not the body. That I've got to engage in seva. I've got to use my senses to satisfy Krishna's senses. That is the proof that we actually understand we're not the body. As I said, it's embarrassing when we take stock of ourselves and see how much of our hopes and aspirations and concept of happiness is based on the body. Therefore, it's actually mercy from Krishna when we experience the realities of the body in terms of disease, suffering, and death. If you embrace life, then you have to embrace death. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Jatasya hijavo mrityo dhruvam janma nitasyata. For one who has taken birth, death is certain. For one who has died, birth is certain. Why is it that we only like to focus on birth and being alive? We don't grasp the full cycle of nature when it comes to our own bodily existence, but we'll readily recognize the cycles of nature in terms of trees and forests and plants. How many of you go into deep meditation about the meaning of life when you see the leaves on the tree, on the trees turn from green to brown and yellow and they fall off on the ground? It's winter's coming. It's the way it is, you know. Tough luck for the trees. Too bad, you know. You know, the leaves were looking green, and now they're brown and they're falling down. Maybe we'll, you know, go somewhere in Northern California with our camera and take pictures of the autumn trees. And that. And we don't think about it in terms of, I'm also part of nature in terms of this body. My autumn will also come. And how will I deal with that? I was talking by phone yesterday with His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and he was telling me how many devotees, they come to see him, and they look at his condition, so frail and with, you know, big tumors here and big tumors there, and they feel sorry for him. He can see that they're actually feeling sorry. They're looking at the body, and it's so overwhelming that they say, oh. Oh, naturally, of course, we feel sympathetic with anyone's sickness or disease. But he was noticing that it's not so easy for them to hear what he has to say because they're feeling for his body. So he was talking to me on the phone and saying, you know, it's easier to talk on the phone because you just focus on my sound vibration and you don't get hung up just feeling sorry for my body. And he was explaining how he's 90% gone. And for some reason, Krishna's prolonging his departure. But as far as departure, you know, there's no doubt about it. So he said, I'm trying to use every moment of my exit from this world as an opportunity to increase Prabhupada's movement, increase the dedication of the devotees. Some devotees who came to see him, he said, he just told them straight out, you're a leader, you shouldn't be acting in this way. Other devotees, he encouraged, please increase your dedication to Prabhupada, like that. So, he said a major thing is to accept that death, cancer, it's all a part of life. In other words, the body is living and the cancer is also living. The fact is, when the body dies, the cancer growth will also die. So all these things are going on together. Naturally, you just like to consider your body as separate from any tumor. Oh, it would be horrible to have a tumor. What are you doing in my body? What are you doing screwing up my life? But that tumor is also alive. So, and you want your body to be alive. So the tumor is growing. Bhakti Chitra Maharaj explains this in his book, his latest beggar book. The tumor is growing. The tumor doesn't realize that it's causing the death of the body, which will also mean its own death. But this is all nature happening. Do we really accept life and death as a part of nature? Or are we just going to one side? That's what sense gratification makes you do. Just one side of the puzzle, not the other side. Yet life, birth, yes. Youth, yes. A nice old age, yes. And die in your sleep. Yeah, that'll be it. This is our dream. And try to understand, by contact with the modes of nature, you dream in this way, that there's going to be hope for my senses and sense gratification. It's going to be all right. My body's going to feel good. And even if my body feels bad sometimes, the doctors will be able to do something that I'll feel good in spite of my disease, in spite of my impending death. That's what doctors are there for. Just recently, one Australian executive achieved the supreme destination in his 40, he was only 45 years old. He was young for such success in the corporate world, and he wasn't American, he's Australian, but yet he achieved the paramgati. He became CEO of McDonald's at the age of 45 in an Australian. Oh, the whole country was celebrating. Just see the unspoken glories of our nation. He's young. He's brilliant. CEO of McDonald's. 1 year later, he was dead from cancer. This is the reality. It's a reality we care not to look into. Yesterday, I was speaking to one of my disciples, one devotee, and I asked her, so you're young, you're 27, 28, naturally you're feeling, there's a future before me, things are going to happen nice for my body, but suppose it doesn't happen like that, suppose your body rebels against your plans and tortures you with disease and dies on you. Then what? Isn't that a reality? I don't think I should have said that because she didn't look too happy. But, but this is life. This is what's going on. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was telling me how all the big astrologers, you know, astrology is important in this kind today, so all the big astrologers had told him, when you are 55, your influence will be all over the world in terms of meeting leaders, in terms of traveling here and there. All the big astrologers are saying that. But Krishna said something else. Krishna said, I have other service for you to do, but not in this world at this time. So many devotees, they put their assurance in having a long lifetime to work everything out, you know, to, you know, go through sense gratification and eventually give it up when you're 70, and it'll all just happen like that, like a song, you know, beginning, middle, end. No, Krishna takes care of his devotees in such a way that they make spiritual advancement. We're thinking, if the Lord is good to me, I'll have a nice body with a nice bodily comfort. And what is Krishna thinking? I know what's best for my devotee. I arrange circumstances to increase the love. Because Krishna is the supreme lover. Now here you have Sati, ready to give up her body. The situation with her father has become insurmountable. Now, if you remember, Sati's going to her father's house seemed to be because she missed her mother, she missed her sisters, she wanted to attend the social life at the yajna, to see the flags waving, as the Bhagavatam said. It seemed like she was attracted to the whole hubbub, the social situation. Just like this weekend, we'll have a nice Prabhupada festival, there'll be devotees coming, and naturally, you expect to meet other devotees and talk. How's it going, Prabhu? This and that. It's nice. So Sati, she wanted to go. Especially it was her father who was hosting the yajna. Her mother, her sisters are going to be there. She wanted to dress up and be part of the scene. It seemed that was her main motive. But actually, we find out in this chapter, her real motive was she wanted to preach to her father. How can you offend Lord Shiva? Her motives were on two levels. First of all, Lord Shiva is her husband, and there's nothing wrong with a wife defending her husband. But secondly, Lord Shiva is special. Vaishnavana Rita Shambhu. He's the greatest Vaishnava. He's neither God nor a living entity. So Sati had a double-fold responsibility. She was curious. Is my father going to acknowledge Lord Shiva's position or not? And when she saw the reality, no oblations into the fire for Lord Shiva, she couldn't handle this anymore. And she began to preach, instruct. All right, let me tell you. Only you could be envious of Lord Shiva. You have managed to do the impossible, Father. You have managed to be envious of Lord Shiva, and no one else is doing that. In other words, Sati is pointing out, all the other sadhus and sages gathered here, they're not envious of Shiva. They're just your people, and they're under your sway. But you are the only one. You are the envious one. Why are you envious of the opulences of Lord Shiva? Both Shiva and I have opulences you can't dream of. But then she said, it's befitting that a materialistic person envies the great souls, because that envy will be the cause of their destruction. She's quite a powerful lady, as you read in the purport. Since Sati was the representation of the external potency of the Lord, it was in her power to vanquish many universes, including many dakshas. But Sati's thinking, if I kill Daksha because of his offenses, it won't be good. People will say that my husband, Shiva, he put me up to do this. And therefore, she said, I had to find another way. The other way was, first, let me try to convince Daksha. Even Brahma, she said, takes flowers offered to Lord Shiva and puts it on his head. So why is my father so repelled by the garland of skulls around Shiva's head and the body smeared with ashes, and how he lives at a crematorium site and his ghostly associates? Why is he so turned off by that when even Brahma will take the flowers offered to Shiva and put on his head? She said all these points. And then she pointed out that Shiva is kind to everyone. He's so easily pleased. For the common persons who worship Shiva, he gives them their material benedictions. For those who tire of material existence and want liberation, Shiva gives them that. And for the devotees who recognize Shiva as the greatest devotee of the Lord, Shiva helps them in their devotional service, helps them in development of their bhakti. So who could be offended by Lord Shiva? Who could be envious of Shiva? Ashutosh, he's so easily pleased. Anyone who worships Lord Shiva, he gives something to. We can see that in the case of one Krishna Leela involving Pondraka. Did you ever wonder how it was that Pondraka had the ability to resemble Krishna to the extent that he did? It was ludicrous, ultimately. But still, there was a shakti. There was a potency by which Pondraka could imitate Krishna. Have a fake Srivats on his chest, a fake Kastuba jewel, a club, a disc, so on. All the paraphernalia, Vishnu, a flag on his chariot with Garuda on it. He had the act done nicely. Although, ultimately, it is ludicrous, because who can imitate Krishna? But still, he made a real good go at it. Where did that potency come from? Shiva. Because Pondraka worships Shiva, and Shiva is just pleased with anyone who worships him. Oh, you're taking so much trouble to worship me. Okay, what do you want? All right, you can have it. Whether it's good or bad, Shiva will just say, take it, take it. You want to imitate Vishnu? Okay, go for it. We'll see what happens. Sati points out that Shiva actually accepts the good, even in someone who's very bad. He just sees the dedication in their worship, their steadiness. That is one of the symptoms of great souls. Just like sometimes our devotees of the present generation. They become a little upset when they read impromptu statements by Prabhupada in private conversations, just talking about this demon or that demon, you know, of the current days. You know, oh, in this way, Hitler was a gentleman, this and that. And, I don't know if I want to be a devotee anymore. How could Prabhupada say that? And the Bhagavatam clearly explains again and again, it's the nature of great souls to see something good somewhere. It doesn't mean they lose sight of the overall impact of the person. I mean, Prabhupada often would just say, Hitler's a demon. And he would also say other 20th century politicians were demons too. But anyway, but at the same time, if he would see something that's exemplary, just like McDonald's, horrible enterprise, but if they try to train their employees in customer service. So if we praise the customer service attitude that perhaps McDonald's is trying to teach to its employees, does that mean we lose sight of the overall horrible nature of the business? No. So similarly, Shiva, he's like that. Oh, you're a demon, but you're steady in your worship to me. What do you want? Oh, you want to be able to touch anyone's head and make it fall off? Okay. That's Shiva. So, Pondraka worship him to imitate Vishnu. Shiva said, okay. So then, what did Pondraka do? He waited for a strategic moment. Balaram had gone to Nanda Braj. So Pondraka thought, now is the time for me to assert myself. So, he was fired up by his associates. You know how your friends can really raise your ego. So, his associates were telling him, you're the real Vishnu, you go challenge that imposter in Dwarka. So, Pondraka was feeling that heady feeling, that enthusiasm from his friends. So, he sent a messenger to Krishna in Dwarka. Now, Shukadeva Goswami twice in the Bhagavatam says that Pondraka sent a messenger. Why twice? Because the Acharya is explaining, Shukadeva Goswami, it couldn't believe it. I mean, how could someone send a messenger to Krishna saying, I'm the real Krishna, you should step down? It was just so incredible for Shukadeva Goswami that he just said it, he repeated himself in the Bhagavatam. So, the messenger arrived and in the court of Krishna and Dwarka and made his presentation. The Supreme Lord, Pondraka, the real Vasudeva, requests you to give up your imitation. He requests you to give up your paraphernalia, your disc, your club. Put it all down. It's all fake and phony. And surrender to Pondraka. Take shelter for your own good. What was the reaction in the court of Dwarka? Oh, they just burst out laughing. All the Kshatriyas, the princes. It just went on and on. They just laughed and laughed. And Krishna let it go on. Krishna was enjoying their laughter. This is life in Dwarka. They just laughed and laughed, and Krishna's enjoying. Then Krishna spoke. He told the messenger. He really got in the messenger's face. All right. You want a message? Here it is. You tell your master Pondraka. I directly call him a rascal. I directly say that I will never give up my paraphernalia. I'll never give up my emblems. In fact, I'm going to use one of my emblems, the chakra, to separate his head from his body. And then, how is he going to feel? Especially when meat-eating birds like vultures will be pecking at his flesh and dogs will be eating his body. Tell him that. This is the supreme personality of Godhead. When no one can imitate Krishna in anything. So even when he's, insulting someone, nothing can compare to Krishna's insult. So he told the messenger that. The messenger went back and reported to Pondraka, and Pondraka patiently heard it. Bhagavatam says patiently. In other words, we can even see, good aspects in demons. Not that we forget that they're demons. Pondraka patiently heard, and even actually before the messenger had arrived, Krishna took off to attack him. It's not that Krishna waited till he got the message and to see his response. No, Krishna sent the message and departed to attack him at the same time. So, Pondraka realized Krishna's approaching his city. He's visiting Kashiraj, his friend, the lord of the king of Varanasi. And so, immediately, they go out of the city with their armies. The Bhagavatam describes that Pondraka, he's not like in one way, he's a jerk, but in another way, he's a highly competent Maharati, a very abnormally powerful warrior. So, he leads the charge outside the city. Kashiraj is bringing up the rear. And then, the battle ensues. And it's like the scene of cosmic annihilation when Lord Shiva destroys the universe. Just havoc everywhere. Krishna's employing his disc, chopping off the heads of horses, soldiers, chopping up chariots. An extraordinary scene of devastation. And then Krishna tells Pondraka, "All right, you asked me to give up my emblems. You asked me to give up my disc. I'm going to give it up right now. Are you ready for it?" So, with the disc, Krishna cuts off Pondraka's head. Krishna had noted before killing him that it's amazing how this Pondraka so much tried to imitate me to the detail. Even the fake Srivats mark on the chest, the fake Kastuba gem. Even Krishna was noticing Pondraka's imitated my posture, my ways of carrying myself. Krishna was laughing before he killed him. This is Shiva's empowerment upon Pondraka. But what is the result? Pondraka is dead. Then Krishna went after Kashiraj, Pondraka's friend, cut off his head with arrows in such a way that the head of Kashiraj flew through the air and landed in the gates of his city. And all the people, they gathered around curiously. Is this the fulfillment of Kashiraj's promise? Because when Kashiraj left to go to battle, he promised his people, "You will see the head of Dwarkadish. You will see it cut off from his body." So everyone was talking like that, especially the wives, the ladies of the palace. They were talking to their maidservants, "Our master, our beloved, he's going to take care of Dwarkadish. He's going to cut off his head. It's going to be a great victory." So when the head came flying through the air, landing, the person they thought, "This must be Dwarkadish's head. Okay." And then they took a closer look. They were shocked. "Oh, no. Natha. Lord, Kashiraj, you're dead." So, the son of Kashiraj, Sudakshin, he couldn't take this standing down. He couldn't take it sitting down. He's a Kshatriya, and he's a demon. So, he knew just what to do. Revenge against the killer, my father. What did he do? Worship Lord Shiva. Get your results very easily. So, he pleased Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva took note. "Oh, this person's performing steady yajnas, steady sadhana for me? All right. What do you want?" This is Ashutosh, easily pleased. This is why Sati couldn't understand. What is Daksha envious of Shiva? He's so easily pleased. He even gives these benedictions to demons. Why is Daksha having such an attitude? So, the son of Kashiraj, Sudakshin, when Lord Shiva came before him, he said, "I want the benediction that I can kill the one who killed my father." Now, Shiva actually told him, "Yes, I'll give you that benediction. You can create a demon that will kill anyone who's the enemy of Brahminical culture." Sudakshin didn't get the hint. This is what anger does to you. Just lose your intelligence. Yes, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Shiva. Yes, where's that demon? Let's create him. So, through black magic, sorcerer arts, out of the sacrificial fire came this huge fiery demon. And that demon began to march toward Dwarka. The Bhagavatam describes, his legs were like the trunks of palm trees. therefore he could walk very fast. And he was marching to Dwarka accompanied by an army of ghouls, ghosts. So the residents of Dwarka, when they saw this huge fiery demon coming, they were just terrified. But what was Krishna doing? Krishna was gambling in his palace, throwing dice. Kshatriya, he's taking that role. Kshatriyas can gamble. And of course, Krishna's got unlimited wealth. His wealth never diminishes, it only increases. So this is the gambling of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the real win-win situation. Krishna throws the dice, he always wins. Some or other, his wealth just keeps increasing. That is God. So the residents of Dwarka, the Dwarkavasis, they came running. Krishna, save us, save us. Trahi, trahi, trilokesha. O Lord of the three worlds, deliver us, deliver us. They told Krishna about the demon. What did Krishna do? Laughed. You can just see the Dwarkavasis just trembling in fear. This huge fiery demon approaching. Krishna's gambling, throwing dice. They tell him, the end of the city is coming. A huge demon is coming. Krishna just laughs, goes on throwing the dice. Krishna didn't even get up to take care of this demon. He just dispatched his Sudarshan chakra. The chakra drove Sudarshan away. And because the demon created by Sudarshan, and because that fiery demon had to kill someone, it went back to Varanasi and it killed Sudarshan and all the priests. And then the chakra was still coming and the chakra burnt the whole city of Varanasi down. Every house just destroyed everything. Because Krishna had promised, I'm going to kill Pondrak and all his associates. So, this whole situation was created by benedictions from Lord Shiva. So Sati is saying, how in anyone's right mind would they offend Lord Shiva, who gives everything so easily? How has my father done this? Yet he's done it, and now finally I preach to him, he won't listen. So I'm going to kill myself. As you heard yesterday, she considered all these social implications. A brahmana can't kill himself because, you know, the body is meant for serving Vishnu. A brahmana has to block his ears when there's blasphemy. A kshatriya can kill others. But vaishyas and sudras, they have to kill themselves when they hear blasphemy. So she considered, I'm like a vaishya, sudra, because of my body. This is humility. She considered that because I'm a woman, I'm in the category of vaishyas, merchants. But sometimes people get upset by that. Oh, this is a very bad statement. But these days, aren't the vaishyas considered the tops in the world? If you say, you're as low as a vaishya, you're as low as Bill Gates, you go, oh, that's a great compliment. But anyway, Sati was thinking of herself in that way out of humility. That is so important in Vaishnavism. So, is that the cue? All right. So, we read here that Sati is a representation of the external potency of the Lord, but it was in her power to vanquish many universes. Still, she's feeling humbly. I'm of this status, let me kill myself. So that is the step that she's taking. It's a very dramatic step with severe consequences. So that's where we're at today. All right. I don't want to... This is a big Sankirtan day, isn't it, Savasrava? Thank you very much, Gauri Shilvara.